Welcome to A Contra Dialogue, a journey through timeless literature. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of A Contra AI.
Welcome back, everyone. Today we're diving deep into, well, quite a challenging but really significant work. We're looking at V.S. Naipaul's 1971 Booker Prize winner, In a Free State. I'll say up front, it's not exactly an easy read, is it? But it feels, I think, very necessary. It really pushes you to confront some uncomfortable truths about displacement, identity, the sort of chaos after political change.
Absolutely. And to really get the grips with the book's tone, that cool, almost clinical detachment, you kind of need to understand Naipaul himself. His background is key. He was, as critics often say, thrice removed.
Mm-hmm.
So Indian heritage, but born in the colonial Caribbean, Trinidad specifically, and then he moves to England, studies at Oxford, becomes part of the English establishment in a way.
Right. That's such a crucial point. He's sort of suspended between these different worlds. And that position, it seems, is the source of his incredibly unsentimental viewpoint. He doesn't seem to feel he owes loyalty to any particular flag or history, which lets him critique that whole post-colonial scene with, well, unflinching honesty. No nostalgia, no easy answers.
Exactly. No ideological mercy, as you say.
Right.
And the timing of the book, 1971, that's vital, too. It landed right when the initial wave of optimism about decolonization was started to crash. You know, the idea that just getting independence would magically fix everything. That was fading fast across Africa and Asia. It was turning into disillusionment, political instability, tribal conflicts. Naipaul captures that mood, that deep unease, perfectly.
And he captures it structurally, too, which is fascinating.
Yeah.
He throws out the standard novel format. It's this composite piece, a prologue, an epilogue, two short stories, and then the main novella in the middle. It feels like a mosaic reflecting these shattered, disconnected lives. And threading through it all is this core question, isn't it? What does freedom really mean? Does political liberation automatically grant personal freedom? Or can it actually become, well, a terrifying burden?
It hits you with that theme right from the start, with the prologue, The Tramp at Piraeus.
Mm.
The narrator is on a ferry in Greece watching this this aging English tramp, and the tramp is just agitated, falling apart, completely lost, wandering. He's free, technically. He can go anywhere, but he has no direction, no anchor.
And what's really chilling there is how Naipaul contrasts him with another passenger, an Austrian man. This Austrian casually suggests that people, like the tramp, these superfluous people, should just be managed,
mm-hmm.
controlled.
Mm.
That impulse, that casual desire to dominate the vulnerable, it sets this dark undercurrent for everything that follows. It connects all the stories, this thread of potential cruelty, even after empire supposedly ends.
That fragmented structure you mentioned, it really forces you, the reader or listener,
yeah.
to make the connections yourself.
Yeah.
He jumps us from Europe to America to London, then Africa.
Mm-hmm.
It drives home the point that this feeling of displacement, of rootlessness, it's not just happening in one place. It's become a global condition, maybe the defining condition of that modern era he's writing about.
Okay, so let's dive into the first of those pieces, one out of many, featuring Santosh. He's the Indian servant who goes from this very structured life in Bombay.
Very defined.
Right, defined servitude, almost comfort in its predictability, to Washington, D.C., which is just bewilderingly vast and alien to him. Why was servitude seemingly happier for him?
Well, in Bombay, Santosh knew exactly who he was. His identity was completely tied up in serving his master within a rigid caste system. He saw himself almost as an extension of his master's body, his master's world. When he gets to D.C., all that structure disappears overnight. He's legally free, sure, but the sheer pressure of having to create an identity for himself, it's psychologically crushing.
He basically becomes invisible, a ghost, as he puts it. And he's terrified by everything new and unfamiliar, especially, the book points out, his fear of Black Americans, the hoopshe, as he calls them, seen through his own ingrained prejudices.
Mm-hmm.
His world just shrinks down to the apartment. His freedom becomes this tiny, paranoid cage.
And his way out, his path to survival, isn't about finding real freedom or connection. It's purely practical. He gets his green card by marrying an American woman he doesn't love, who owns a restaurant.
Yeah.
His marriage a convenience, totally transactional. So on the surface, he achieves a kind of American dream citizen, business owner.
Yes, he's got the papers, the security, the small business. But the conclusion Naipaul draws is just devastating. He's traded that certainty of servitude for what he calls terrifying emptiness.
Exactly.
The legal chains are gone, but the psychological cost is immense. That quote you mentioned really sums it up. I was so happy in the world until I came here. Now I am a ghost. It perfectly captures that burden of freedom when you're cut off from your roots.
And that internal breakdown, that fear of freedom's formlessness, it sort of shifts outwards in the next story, doesn't it? It becomes paranoia, Mania, almost.
Right.
Move to London and tell me who to kill.
This one follows a West Indian immigrant, and his whole life, his entire identity, revolves around this single intense obsession. He's sacrificing everything to pay for his younger brother Dio's education back in the Caribbean, or maybe Dio is in London too. The point is the funding. Initially, this purpose gives him something to hold on to amidst the pretty grim reality of immigrant life in London.
But that self-sacrifice twists, doesn't it? It curdles into this, this destructive mania. He's living in squalor himself, but he starts seeing conspiracies everywhere, every little problem, every setback. He interprets someone trying to sabotage his noble mission for Dio. The line between dedication and paranoia just completely dissolves.
And then the thing he sacrificed everything for just evaporates. Dio fails his studies, and then, to top it off, he marries a white English woman. And that just pulls the rug out from under the narrator completely. His entire reason for existing is gone. The psychological structure he built just collapses.
The end is truly chilling. He has this breakdown, commits a violent act that seems almost random, misguided. But his final cry, "Tell me who to kill," it reveals everything. He's been consumed by this narrative of persecution. He needs an enemy, someone to blame, to give his life meaning now that Dio has failed him. He's trapped by the very obsession that defined him.
Okay, so from that intense personal breakdown, we move to the heart of the book, the novella, also called In a Free State. And here, Naipaul puts all these themes onto a much larger, more volatile stage, post-colonial Africa. It's an unnamed country, but it feels a lot like Uganda around that time, on the edge of civil war, infrastructure crumbling, ethnic tensions simmering, just instability everywhere.
And we're on this road trip, this very tense journey through this landscape with two white English expats. First, there's Bobby. He's a civil servant, homosexual, clearly very lonely and insecure. And he puts on this constant performance of being liberal-minded, progressive, but it feels like a mask, hiding his own discomfort and maybe even his prejudices.
And traveling with him is Linda. She's the perfect counterpoint. She's this incredibly cynical, sharp-tongued wife of another expat. She sees all the decay and the absurdity, but without any of Bobby's attempts to pretty it up.
She's just jaded, detached.
Yeah, and they clearly irritate each other, but they're stuck together sharing this unease. They're both outsiders in this newly independent and increasingly hostile nation.
And the journey itself keeps confronting them with the harsh realities. Like when they have to give a lift to an Indian shopkeeper who's fleeing ethnic violence, it just highlights how precarious life is for minorities caught in these power vacuums.
But the real moment of uncomfortable truth, I think, is that interaction Bobby has with the Zulu boy, the young statuesque man at the hotel where they stop.
No, definitely.
It's deeply uneasy because it exposes Bobby's own loneliness, yes, but also something more predatory, his colonial gaze, trying to find connection, but also asserting a kind of power, maybe seeking validation. It's complex and troubling.
And any sense of moral high ground or even just basic safety derived from being European gets violently stripped away later. At a military checkpoint, Bobby tries to pull rank, essentially, tries to assert some kind of old colonial authority with the soldiers.
Right.
And the result, he gets dragged out and beaten brutally, publicly, humiliated.
It's the ultimate power shift, isn't it? That beating isn't just physical. It's the destruction of his perceived immunity, that invisible shield of being white, of being European, in this place. And his reaction afterwards is so stark, so Naipaul-esque. It was only a beating. They were not going to do anything. They had done it already.
Mm-hmm.
The real damage, the psychological blow of realizing his complete powerlessness in this free state that had already happened.
And where does their journey end? In the compound.
Yeah.
This fenced-in, perfectly manicured, sterile little enclave for the expats. It looks like a bizarre copy of an English suburb dropped into Africa.
A false sanctuary?
Completely false. It symbolizes how that colonial or neo-colonial mindset just retreats behind walls. It doesn't engage the chaos outside. It just isolates itself, pretending it's not happening.
So if we try to pull these threads together from all the stories, what are the big takeaways, the core messages? The first one has to be about this illusion or maybe the burden of freedom that's loud and clear. For Naipaul, just declaring independence doesn't solve the Dup problems. If you don't have a sense of belonging, a culture, a stable identity, freedom can just be this terrifying emptiness. It can lead to breakdown.
Which connects directly to the second theme, the performance of identity. Naipaul seems deeply suspicious of the roles people adopt. Bobby's liberalism is a thin veneer over insecurity and maybe prejudice. The London narrator's noble sacrifice turns into a destructive obsession. These constructed identities provide some temporary meaning, maybe, but they seem fragile. They shatter under pressure.
And wrapping it all up is this bleak observation about power and how cruelty persists. That epilogue, the circus at Luxor, really drives it home. You have these European tourists casually tormenting local Egyptian kids with the whip for fun.
It's such a small, petty act of dominance, but it feels ancient.
Exactly. It suggests these patterns, the West versus the rest, the powerful dominating the vulnerable, they don't just vanish when the formal empire collapses. They find new, maybe smaller, meaner ways to continue. It echoes that casual cruelty towards the tramp right back in the prologue.
I think what makes the book so powerful, and maybe so difficult for some, is that it refuses easy targets. It doesn't sentimentalize anyone, not the colonizers, not the colonized, not the newly independent nations. It just forces you to look at the psychological damage, the chains of history, the burden of rootlessness, and realize those are often much harder to break than any political chains.
Yeah, it suggests political freedom is just the starting line, isn't it?
Mm.
The real test of a free state, or maybe a free person, is whether they can actually navigate that terrifying landscape of choice and self-definition without just collapsing.
It really makes you reflect on how genuine freedom requires not just external liberation, but immense internal strength and a sense of place.
And maybe the final thought it leaves us wrestling with is,
yeah,
is our own modern condition, this era of constant movement, global transit, maybe fractured online identities, is this the ultimate, perhaps unintended consequence of chasing global freedom? Are we all, in a way, becoming perpetually displaced, always moving, but maybe never truly rooted? Something to think about. Outro narration pre-recorded. This conversation ends here. We'll meet again with another unique work of world literature. This audio summary is brought to you by a Contra Foundation.